Chapter 12, Part 2. Section 5. This section's about planning and protecting. In developing the blueprint for a better future, it'll be tempting to bring in experts from the old system. This is a weak point in any revolution and should be avoided. The old system is toppled and the new people take power. But while the cheers of celebration are still reverberating, the overseers of the new order start to see something. Empty spaces, vacuums of power and skill and expertise. Skilled people are needed to guide communications, social welfare, agriculture, diplomacy, economic policy, and to get the wheels of society turning again. So the new order brings in some experts from the old order to fill the vacuum. And in comes the old thinking, the old ideas, the unreformed assumptions and approaches and priorities. And that's when the revolution fails. This is a hard trap to avoid. In an ideal world, and we're certainly not in one of those, the leaders and technocratic advisors of tomorrow would be trained in advance, so that they were ready to take over when the circumstances demanded. That's not possible. But those fighting for change in government can still think carefully in advance about how to approach this. They can try to identify skilled individuals with a deep understanding of the climate problem and its causes who can help train the leaders and technocratic advisors of the future. They need to approach the challenge as if they were building Apollo 11, which was also constructed without the real conditions in which it would operate. As with the space missions of the 1960s, there's a lot that can be planned in advance. Key skills will be needed to build a new economic system based on providing essential products and services, including food, medical care, and transportation. Jobs will be needed to employ the hundreds of millions of people whose livelihoods have been lost. They'll need to be retrained and supported financially and emotionally as they make the transition to new jobs and workplaces with new and unfamiliar colleagues and expectations. Behavioural psychologists will be needed to help guide, acknowledge, and manage the wide range of emotions that will emerge across society during the transition. Skills will be needed to build a new social system so communities can provide pastoral care to one another, with support groups to help those who are struggling with the changes. There will be a lot of anger too, for example, from people who don't like hearing that they can't fly to other countries for their vacation or who resent the change. This is likely to be more challenging in the US, where the idea that people should be mostly free from government control is very deeply rooted in national thinking. In almost every society, skills will be needed to rethink the role of politics and political institutions, as well as finance and banking. Many of the structures and practices of modern political systems are legacies of old ways of thinking. The new system will need to redefine the social structures necessary to achieve the primary goal, preventing runaway climate change by creating a stable, ecologically sustainable global society. The long-term role of money and finance will need to be carefully thought through too. It'll be easy to fall into the trap of old thinking. New thinkers will need to constantly ask themselves and each other, why? What does this achieve? It's hard to ask these fundamental questions about topics societies have been taught to take for granted, but it's precisely the structures and habits of life that are not normally questioned that need most urgently to be questioned. And beware, many people who don't want change in these areas will make convincing sounding arguments against change to frustrate those building a new system. It'll take intellectual rigour, a clear vision, and a strong, honest heart to weed out those with self-serving, greedy, manipulative agendas. So do a lot of research before accepting advice from anyone. Look into their education, their career background. If they were previously connected with the kind of thinking that's created this mess, be very cautious. They'll need to prove how they've reformed. Don't be easily persuaded, even if they seem convincing. In designing policies, strategies, and structures for the new system, Don't forget that different communities have different realities. Their experience of climate change will be different, and that means that they're likely to react differently. A poor community with shoddy infrastructure and few job opportunities may react with anger to being told that they have to make sacrifices. Millions of people have been marginalized economically, politically, judicially, and socially by the existing system. They've watched opportunities, money, privilege, and equity circulate in the middle and upper class communities, but not their own. So changemakers will need to do their research and tread with sensitivity and respect before asking those who've been badly treated by the current system to give up anything that they might see as security, dignity, or comfort, even when this might seem irrational. Of course, theorizing is different from doing. COVID-19 demonstrated that. The US and the UK were said to be the best prepared countries to handle a pandemic, according to a report published just before the COVID-19 virus began its spread across the world. The report assessed the capacities and capabilities of countries to respond to a biological threat. However, the authors assumed that these would operate in a vacuum, isolated from the conflicting priorities, personal agendas, and irrational dislikes of reality. Everything that's unavoidable, everything that's inherently human, didn't seem to come into their assessment of how pandemic planning would work. This is typical of many sustainable development programs too. Time after time, those who design sustainability programs forget to think about how people react in real life. Humans don't do as they should, they do as they do. So plan for reality and think about the way people actually behave. Think about the stupid, instinctive, messy, and annoying ways people behave and build that into your plans. And beware of using culture change programs, which are often infected with a standardizing disease which totally ignores the realities of human behavior and the natural world. Humans are governed by friendship and fear and greed and hunger, love, jealousy, tiredness, lust and boredom, all the things that look wishy-washy and unscientific in a managerial report, that are seen as psychobabble that no sensible person should take seriously. But these floppy concepts are also the issues that make clever, glossy managerial programs fail. Societies only know how they'll react to change when real life plays out. That said, planning ahead and training in key skills can help reduce the shock of change when it comes. Many obstacles and risk factors are predictable, as long as planners think like humans and not like sterile automatons. Learn to ask the right questions and plan for people, not some sort of instant noodle utopia. The sixth section is about organizing and pushing for change. Once you've spoken to all your family, your neighbors and friends, and armed with a fact sheet which is at the back of this book, push for a meeting with the high-level decision makers in your organization, or the dean of your university, or the head teacher of your school, the vice president, the general manager, or the CEO of your company. And tell them, this is what's going to happen. Humanity has less than 15 years to stop a climate change chain reaction and needs to cut its greenhouse gas emissions by 60% in the next decade. If it fails, hundreds of millions of people will die. Everybody has to change, including the people who work or study here. If not, this organization will be contributing to the deaths of hundreds of millions of people. We want to help change how the company, school, university behaves and do the right thing. This is what the organization, the academic institution, or whatever it is, needs to do. Sell investments in companies with high greenhouse gas emissions, such as fossil fuel producers, airlines, car manufacturers, cement or shipping, which extract non-renewable resources or which damage ecosystems, such as mining. Ask the organization or school to publicize news of its divestments. For schools and universities, in every academic discipline, demand climate change be added to the curriculum, even if it seems minimally relevant. So, for example, the law faculty should not teach students to protect companies that damage the environment. In economics, management studies, and finance, students shouldn't be taught that societies always should prioritize profit, and they shouldn't be taught to ignore the environmental consequences. People studying accountancy should learn to measure the destruction of nature, and architects should be taught only to design buildings that need little or no energy. If you're talking to companies, show them how their products or services damage the planet. And this should be done in absolute terms, not comparative. And when you're speaking to schools, or universities, or companies, demand a draft plan showing what the organization is going to do to change. Companies that directly produce or use carbon-intensive products or services should be encouraged to stop. Some might be able to shift to alternative products or services. So start the ball rolling about what's possible and fuel the debate within the organization. Help the company's leaders understand that there's no other way. Build the pressure from inside. Of course, we understand that that's simply not going to fly in some companies. But communicate across your network about the action you've taken and how your organization responds. Learn from others and help others learn from your experiences to refine what they can do too. The seventh section of this chapter is about being active and taking down. For those who are prepared to take a more activist role, set your sights on the activities that are blatantly, unapologetically producing climate heating emissions, the ones that don't even pretend not to and don't try to hide. They're quite easy to spot when you start looking. They're the ones that had the excuse of ignorance 50 years ago to behave without a care for the future, but whose continued activities are inexcusable today. Take, for example, Formula One. Great fun, a bunch of mostly guys racing very fast cars around a track every week. Thrilling, high-octane stuff in the 1970s with all the crashes and bad boys and speed. But in a world rapidly approaching a catastrophic tipping point, what possible purpose does this circus serve? Has anyone in Formula One, the equivalent in the US might be NASCAR, even thought about how callous, about how disgustingly sadistic this whole activity has become? These people are celebrating the combustion engine while the planet burns. That's like setting up a barbecue competition in communities destroyed by wildfires. What the hell do they think they're doing? How dare they? So here's what needs to happen. Target every company that sponsors Formula One. Red Bull, Tag Heuer, Rolex, Rauch, that's a fruit juice manufacturer, Exxon, Daimler, Aston Martin, Rexona, Martini, Dieter, they're apparently optical experts, just a shame they can't see, AT&T, Oris, Hackett, DHL, what are they delivering? Armageddon? UPS, Heineken, JCB, Oris, Puma. These products are sponsoring death. So put pressure on your friends, family and neighbours, as well as your organisation, to stop associating with these companies and brands. If you drink Red Bull, if you stock Red Bull in your company's canteen, you're sponsoring murder. Any country or city that hosts Formula One needs to go on a blacklist. If your city hosts Formula One, put pressure on the city council to pull out of this shameful, murderous activity. Push against coverage. Ask any media channel that covers them, what on earth are you doing? No serious media operation would televise bear baiting or tobacco smoke-a-thons in a room full of children. So why are they televising Formula One? Push for a news blackout of motor racing. And all those famous racing car drivers who are hailed as role models and champions, they should be confronted with the stark truth about what they do. Hey, Mr. Hamilton, Mr. Vettel, you're not heroes. You have no honour. No small boys should hold you up as an icon of manhood. This is not the 1970s. You're not Niki Lauda or James Hunt, whose consciences were at least free of the stain of climate change. You know damn well the consequences of burning hydrocarbons. How can you get behind the wheel? And don't stop there. If you can run a successful campaign against one organization, once you've learned what works, sharpen your blade and choose the next. Through social media and your network, agree on the target. An oil company, an airline, a cement producer, or a car maker. But choose only one. and then do the same thing. Arrange to boycott its products or services and have everyone you know boycott them too. Spread the word, write articles and put up posters. Those taking a more active route to change should also remember that flexibility is needed, such as that displayed by the protesters in Hong Kong during the summer of 2019. They adopted a flash mob approach to activism, emerging and then disappearing like vapour. Most companies are vulnerable to this sort of activity, especially since the COVID-19 crisis began. A 10% drop in sales is hard for many companies to survive, so target a 25% decline as a first step, and work with overseas networks too, so that your impact is global. There's nothing illegal about this. So work together to target the polluters, the rich, and those who've promoted fake news and climate change denial. Organise a boycott, avoid products, demonise and shame those who use them. But always focus on one company at a time so that your fire is tightly focused. Targeting lots of companies at the same time will have much less impact. The eighth and last section of this chapter is about getting the needle in. As well as boycotting those who are directly responsible for humanity's plight, those who seek change should look for other pressure points of influence. Street demonstrations are too easily ignored and it risks arrest. So try to identify points of influence that will have a useful effect, a little like finding the parts on the body for acupuncture needles. Demand changes that seem counterintuitive, but that also make sense, and which will make people sit up and pay attention. Think of using a million straws to break the system's back. For example, lobby your political representative, at least until you've successfully replaced him or her, for them to regulate for a shorter working week. This may not be simple in America, as it might be elsewhere, but even in the US, try to start a debate about vacation time, because American workers toil for longer than most of their peers. Regulating for more vacation time creates jobs. It also makes people happier because they don't have to work as much. Think about it this way. There's a fixed amount of paid work to do every year. If the people doing this work have shorter hours, employers have to hire people to make up the shortfall. When so many people have lost their jobs because of COVID-19, the need for societies to share the available work better is higher than it's been for decades. So push for a four-day week. Who doesn't want that? At the same time, push for other reforms which help move the system in a better direction or highlight some of its flaws. Demand that those who look after children or the elderly at home get paid by the state for what they do, and properly. Their work is extremely valuable to society, and they should get paid for it. To fund this, demand higher taxes on the rich and high death duties. And then everyone starts life with the same. These ideas might seem crazy, but they're also in the interest of most people, and so they should gain majority support. Encourage people to think differently. Finally, demand a reallocation of government budgets. Demand less spending on defence and more on combating what is the much greater threat to everyone's safety, climate change. Tell your representative that all the money that's currently wasted on state-sponsored murder should be devoted instead to responding to climate change, and tell them why. We know that this too will likely fall on deaf ears, certainly at first. But keep pushing, because a world without weapons is not only something to dream about. If no one pushes, it'll never happen. End of chapter 12, part 2.